BCFM Community Radio for Bristol on 93.2 FM. For more information or to listen live on the internet, go to our website at www.bcfm.org.uk. BCFM, your radio. Wake up to yesterday on BCFM. Midnight to midday, we repeat all the programmes so you can catch up on all the ones you've missed or just enjoy them again. BCFM 93.2 FM. Your choice, your voice.
Hello and welcome to Dialect Radio for Saturday the 15th of August. The Dialect Radio gang come to you straight from our studio in the heart of Bristol with features and music about Bristol for Bristol. We also welcome our listeners from Preston, South America, Anthea assures us, and in fact anywhere people have internet access via dialectradio.co.uk. Today I'll be interviewing Satiana, who is the founder of The Free Shop in Stokes Croft here in Bristol. Anthea has been to the Edinburgh Festival, and we hear three features of her adventures, mainly in the press office by the sounds of it. And Tony brings us a feature about internet service providers and their obligations to you, the user. We also have another instalment of The Innkeeper's Diary by John Fothergill, read excellently by Malcolm Greaves, and Jess Barks is here with a What's On Guide to Live Music in Bristol. I'm John Peters Coleman, and I'd like to introduce to the studio Satiana. Hello.
Hello, good evening.
So how long have you... How long ago was it that you founded The Free Shop? And sort of tell us a little bit about what a free shop is.
Well, I began it last year. There was a building in central St Paul's where I found an empty room, and the people in the house were very happy to have the facility there. They didn't really understand what I was going to do, so I started filling it with items I'd collected, which people had given away, and put some railings up, and we got clothes and gifts of jewellery and footwear and games and books. And from there it grew. Other people started doing the same, putting things in that they didn't want, going in, browsing, finding things they could use in their life. And eventually that place moved on in its use, and we moved to our present building, which is on Stokes Croft. So there we expanded, and we had people renovating a building for us. Well, basically, it's a place where we collect things, or people bring things in. We present them to the public. They walk in. If they find something they think they could use, okay, then they have it.
How do you sort of regulate my kind of... the risk might be that people will just sort of come bring in a load of crap that they don't want. How do you sort of regulate what sort of you agree to take on? What sort of things do you have in your shop at present?
Well... we don't like to second-guess the future, and some people's waste might be another person's... well, we don't know. Okay. So, in a way, if there's too much of something, like it's just too much to carry for us, then we're going to say, well, that's enough. You know, this isn't a drop-off point for your rubbish, you know, that kind of stuff. But, on the other hand, we're happy for businesses, etc., to say, hey, I've got so much of this and we don't need it. Can you find a place for it?
Yeah.
And
what sort of things do you have? What sort of variety of things do you have at the moment?
Well, I mean, everything from sports equipment to occasional bits of furniture, clothing, books, CDs, tapes, computers, electrical items, toys.
So pretty much, you name it.
For the kitchen, whatever it might be, yeah.
Okay. Now, it's interesting that... Tony gave a sort of an introduction to sort of chat about it and sort of labelled you an entrepreneur, if you will. But you said you're not an entrepreneur. How do you sort of make any money from this at all?
Personally, no. And nobody involved in it makes any money either.
Okay, but so how do you sort of pay the rent on the shop as such?
Well, we found a place that a community organisation gave us a key for, insisting that it be used for the benefit of the community. And when we explained our project, they said, yeah, absolutely, go right ahead. So we were given permission to be in there and use it as we saw fit for this end.
Okay.
I
heard you sort of mention social justice when you sort of introduced the concept to me before the show. What would you mean by social justice in concept of this shop?
Well, some might say... and it's very interesting that we might look at also in terms of equality in society. that perhaps a society isn't quite justly balanced in some ways, and there are people who don't have as much as others, and there's people who have literally too much, and they know they have too much, and it's a bit hampering their freedom of movement in life, in a sense. And some people recognise that when they come into the shop, and they're thinking of taking a lot away with them, and we sort of have this sort of conversation about what is it to take a lot from a place, and do they really need it, and hey, this is a big cycle of stuff through this place, and perhaps you're going to get this kind of stuff next week, or by next week perhaps you don't need it anymore, and if you do take a lot of stuff, you might find yourself coming back with a lot of it again to give back to us, and is that really what you want to do? So it's also a way to have conversations about what we're doing with our belongings, what we're doing with our consumerism, and what we're doing in the relationship that we create with the people in shops and people we see working around us in retail.
What do you think of the culture in the Stokescroft area? It's all always been sort of just under the radar. It's kind of right next to the city centre, and yet there's not a lot of money around there. What did you think of the Stokescroft area when you first saw it, and how do you feel about Stokescroft and what could be done for it as an area, as a community? What do you think's lacking?
Well, I tend to towards seeing abundance, really, which is why I started this free shop, because I felt the great deal of abundance in our the wealth of things we have. So I feel that there's a lot of people with talent, and there's a lot of people with artistic aspirations in the area. Mm-hmm. I do see there's people with quite a considerable amount of money in the area.
Yeah.
And they may not at present be prepared to invest, but that's a subject I don't really want to go into at present. I think it's an area without a great deal of identity. It's bordering two areas, such as the St. Paul's kind of area, and more up the hill, let's say, with definite senses of identity. So I think it feels a bit caught in the middle, without something that really gives it that sense of uniqueness, in a sense. But then again, maybe that is its uniqueness.
I mean, I'm imagining mostly poor people, or people who may not have not a lot of money, may come to the shop to take things. What sort of is your experience? What kind of people usually come into? Is it a whole wide range of people?
Anybody who can get their heads around having something without having to give anything in return.
Okay, so how do you stop people from sort of saying, being greedy and just sort of taking loads of stuff, like more than they might really need?
By engaging them in conversation about it. Usually people, when they're engaged in a conversation, their conscience starts to click in, or they get a bit conscious about what they're doing. And then they decide, well, this really won't serve me to have a lot of stuff at home that actually maybe I don't really need.
Do you think that's just because they maybe feel a bit embarrassed about the fact that you've suddenly started to talk to them about it? Is it English sort of reticence and sort of fear of embarrassment? Oh, no, he's talked to me about it. All right, well, I'll put it back on the shelf.
Well, we really leave it up to them. And if they want bags to carry it out with, we do our best to provide it. And okay. We're very encouraging, because we know how easy it is to be swamped by the donations of goodwill that we cycle back into the community.
Okay. Is there any particular reason why you've done this now? And what did you do before you opened the shop? What sort of background do you have?
Well, why did I do it now? I saw examples of this kind of thing in Switzerland and Spain, and I was delighted when I came across it, and I thought, wow, this is really sensible. This seems to work, and this is a really lovely thing. I really enjoyed the experience of it. And then I felt, well, why don't we have this in Bristol? Okay, well, if nobody else is doing it, I could do this. I've been working with homeless people in Bristol for the last few years, and out of concern for them, I decided that I wanted to offer something that would enable them to receive things and have the experience of receiving without there being any kind of contract or bargain involved.
Okay, what's sort of the oddest thing, do you think, or anything memorable that you've received in the shop and you thought, wow, that's just bizarre?
I don't know, I feel a bit stumped now. I don't know, maybe I have too much of an open mind to think something's odd.
Okay, that's an interesting... Well, that's an interesting answer in itself. You're not quick to judge, evidently, from your personality.
It's perhaps not for me to say on that.
Okay, fair enough. Exactly where on Stokescroft is it? Once again, and sort of where can people find it, and when are you open?
If you were to come to Stokescroft where City Road joins Stokes Croft.
Yep.
Four doors down on the other side from City Road, that's where we are, next to the Emporium Art Gallery.
Okay, you open on Saturdays?
We open at present on Thursday and Friday afternoons.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, Satiana, thank you very much for coming in, and I wish you the best of luck with it.
Thank you.
Well, our intrepid reporter, Anthony Page, was at the Edinburgh Fringe last week, so we bring you a bit of a Fringe special with Anthony. We've got three features spread out over the show, and this is the first one. It's an interview with Dean Elliott, who is the star of the West End show Buddy, and it was recorded in the dressing room at C Venue in Edinburgh.
My name is Dean Elliott, and I'm currently working for Stop Clock Theatre Company at Man Band, the Sweet Venue in the Edinburgh Festival, and also in Ed the Musical at C Venue at the Edinburgh Festival.
Can you tell us about your role as Buddy Holly in the West End?
Sure, I've just finished 3 years of playing Buddy Holly internationally on the UK tour, and also in the West End, in London's West End, and I got nominated for Best Actor in a Musical. It was a very good 3 years, especially in the West End. That was a lot of fun, and we lasted there just under 2 years in the West End, and just recently I went over to Buddy Holly's hometown to perform in Lubbock, Texas, for the 50th anniversary of Buddy Holly's death, which is this year. So I was asked to go over there and perform over there, and I've just got back now, and here I am in Edinburgh.
So why did Buddy fold it after 3 years?
Well, it's been going for 20 years, the show, and the plan was to get it back into the West End for the 50th anniversary. And we actually closed a couple of weeks after February the 3rd, which was the day that the plane crashed, you know, 50 years ago. And then it closed, but it's still now international. There's shows in South Africa, Canada, Australia, and a UK tour is going out in a few months.
So no plans for a film then?
No. I think the last film was Gary Busey way back when he won an Oscar, didn't he, for his portrayal as Buddy Holly. So no, I don't think so.
So
but that'd be nice.
Yeah, well, updated film.
Yeah.
So you're going to sing a song from the musical?
Sure, Buddy, absolutely. Yeah, why not? Why not? This one's called Peggy Sue.
If you knew Peggy Sue, then you know why I feel blue without Peggy. My Peggy Sue, oh, well, I love you, gal, yes, I love you, Peggy Sue. Peggy Sue, Peggy Sue, oh, how my heart yearns for you, oh, Peggy. My Peggy Sue, I do. Oh, well, I love you, gal. Yes, I love you, Peggy Sue. I want you, Peggy Sue. that little girl in the Wonky Peggy Sue.
How old was Buddy Holly when he died?
He was 22 when he died, and he died with the Big Bopper, who was 28, and Ritchie Valens, who wrote La Bamba, 17, and often referred to as the day that the music died.
And are there any surviving members of his band still
alive? The Crickets are both still alive, and actually while I was out in Lubbock, Texas, I got to meet Buddy Holly's brothers and Buddy Holly's niece and nephew, who I'm still all in touch with, which is very nice. And I've met his wife before. Actually, she came to the West End and did a speech and got up on stage with us and was dancing in the final song, so that was neat.
That must be quite touching, going to his hometown and meeting all his family.
It was really. It was great in a lot of ways, doing the show out there, but it also felt like a closure of a chapter, because I've been doing Buddy for so long. The last chapter of the book, you know, doing the West End and whatnot, and the last chapter of the book was going there, seeing the grave, meeting the family, going to the recording studios, you know, going to the museum. And then once I'd done that, it was amazing. And then when I got back, I felt like I'd finished a chapter of my life, so that was nice.
What's the next project?
Well, currently I'm working here at Edinburgh for Stop Clock, which have four shows here at the festival. One being Lucky Dip, the second one being Ed the Musical, third one is Foursome, and the fourth one is a show called Man Band.
That was an interview with Dean Elliott, star of the West End show Buddy. And now the show business doesn't stop here, because I've got a hip-hop star with me in the studio. And I'd like to welcome Katraz and Amelia.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
That's quite all right. So you're here to promote your single, which is called Knock Knock.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's released on August the 24th on iTunes and all other good online stores.
Okie dokie. So have you got a record deal? Or is this?
Yeah, I have got a record deal. Yeah, it's with Sidewalk 7.
Okay.
Who are a small London independent label, and they are actually a subsidiary of Universal Records.
Okay, so what sort of musical background are you sort of coming from? How long have you been in the music scene?
About 12, 14, 15 years on that.
Okay.
Been doing it a long time.
Yeah. Mm. So this is like my sort of Jules Holland question, because he always asks it. What is your first memory of a sort of music as a child? Like, when you think about music, what's the sort of...
The first thing that came into my head was the theme tune to Back to the Future.
Really? Mm. Oh, fair effort. I like that.
That's actually the first record I ever bought.
Okay. Mm. You're predominantly, I'm imagining, as a hip-hop guy, sort of a Dex man.
No, not at all.
No?
I'm not a DJ.
What sort of equipment and stuff do you use to get your hip-hop together?
Well, I use a PC, and I use a virtual studio sequencing system called Cubase.
Okay, yeah, I've heard of that.
Yeah, and I use a sampler, and I just kind of knock up beats on that, really.
Okay.
Got a little MIDI keyboard.
Yeah.
Triggering sounds and...
Okay.
Yeah, and I've got my own, you know, little microphone and... Well, it's not little, it's quite big.
Bragging about your microphone.
It's not too big.
Most ungentlemanly.
Yeah.
My microphone's bigger than
yours. It's well formed, well sized.
Okay. Amelia.
Quite a lot of foam on it.
Yeah. Like a big afro on top of it.
Yeah.
My friend at work, Steve, is a massive sort of hip hop fan and goes by the DJ name Sabine's OBE. I don't know if you that name rings any bells. Some people don't.
Yeah.
Some people not. Yeah.
I know. I think I went to college with him.
Oh, no way.
I think so. Western
Supermare. Steve Perrett. That's Steve Perrett. That's his name. Yeah. Oh, right. Okay. I mean, he's like a real old school kind of sort of a hip hop fan. He thinks like 78 to 1998 is like the golden era, and that was sort of a bit dead. I don't know what you're. Some people are really heavily hip hop, and some people are just sort of, they like music in general, but they're just sort of wind up making hip hop. Where do you sort of stand?
Well, I would say the best era for hip hop for me was like sort of 92, 93 to like 98 or something like that.
Okay.
But no, I'm not strictly hip hop at all. I did go for a phase of only liking hip hop, but you know, the music I make isn't really strictly hip hop. It's more kind of it bridges the gap between hip hop and pop.
Okay.
I think so. A lot of people who don't like hip hop, who are put off by the term hip hop,
yeah,
actually like my music because it's kind of hip hop without the ego. If that doesn't sound too egotistical.
Okay, now you are rapping, vocalizing on the record.
Yeah, Yeah, rapping, rhyming.
Okay, have you been with sort of crews, or have you sort of been with other people and done tours?
Nah, just solo, really.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Amelia, I understand you're doing a bit of singing. I've yet to hear it. We're going to play it in a minute, but I haven't heard this yet. But you sing on it.
Yeah. What I've sort been singing with her for about 10 years.
Okay.
So what sort of history what sort of history do you have as a singer? Do you sing with, have you sung with bands?
I am singing in a band, another band, yeah.
Okay, who's that?
Pindrop Band.
Pindrop Band, yeah. Okay. What sort of stuff do you usually sing? Is this in your sort of style?
Normally I sing jazz, yeah. But with our, it's just, you know, chorus for the hip-hop or pop. Al writes the lyrics. And
okay. What do you think of the music scene in Bristol? Either of you, really? How do you sort of find it?
The music scene, yes.
Bit of a broad term.
It's
a bit of a broad term, but
well, I don't think it's exactly what it used to be, you know, with Massive Attack and Portishead and Tricky, and I don't know. I think I'm not really a big part of the Bristol music scene. I've just kind of been doing my own thing.
So whereabouts are you, Bristol lad yourself? Do you sort
I'm from Clifton.
We came across a good band recently, didn't we, at Mull's? Mr. Wolves.
What, Gecko?
Yeah.
Yeah, Gecko, pretty good.
Okay.
Sometimes we stumble upon good bands.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was from Clifton.
But we went to I played at the Lab, actually, last week, and there was some dodgy music going on down there.
Yeah, heavy.
I think it was kind of fidget bass or something. Everyone's into,
Well, there's
dubstep's, dubstep's really big as well, isn't it? But I haven't really...
Student music, I think that is generally.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay, so how are you finding sort of being with a record label, promoting a single? Is it sort of exciting, like you'd hope it'd be? Or is it kind of a bit...
No, it's kind of... they're not promoting it in a... They're promoting it in a kind of little online way.
Right.
But I'm still... It's still down to me to do a lot of promotion myself. So I'm just kind of ringing up radio stations and, you know, trying to get the press involved. Well, actually... I went out in the venue today.
Yeah.
Or actually on Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah, I got a full page feature in the venue. So, yeah. I'm just trying to promote my... Yeah, I've got to do a lot of promoting myself, really. So it's quite stressful. But
so it's a bit of a full-time
job. It's kind
of
exciting as well. Yeah, it is pretty much. I can't ever stop thinking about
anyone
it.
Anyone out there who wants to back him?
Yeah, anyone who wants to kind of invest, really? Like...
Okay, what sort of things have you got coming up, sort of gig-wise?
I've got this residency starting at Jester's in October, so that's going to be good. The new Jester's that used to be the Magic Box, and the guy that's taken it over is really into my stuff, and he wants me to just come there every month, and he's going to get some like all the old school rappers over from like the 80s from the States and
oh cool,
so Melly that'll
be there, isn't
it? Yeah, Melly Mel's, well, he's doing it in September. Okay. But I'm not going to start until October.
So where can people find you on the web?
Oh, they can find me at myspace.com/Catraz Music. Catraz is spelled C-A-T-R-A-Z.
okay.
And I've also got a video for Knock Knock, my single, and the video is on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and search Catraz Knock Knock.
Cool.
And it's released on August the 24th.
Okay. I'm assuming also, online, as a sort of point of information, Catraz, you named yourself, what, after Alcatraz the prison?
Yeah, well...
Yeah, good.
I mean, my name is Al. Okay. And I did actually call myself Alcatraz until recently.
Okay.
But I thought I'd just kind of get away from the prison. And just kind of just get, just move, just evolve and escape from the prison and just prison.
So perhaps in the future you might progress to the San Francisco mainland away from the island altogether.
Yeah.
Name wise.
Yeah. Possibly. If you
like. No answer to that,
but
really,
I mean, I still do call myself Alcatraz sometimes, but my project name now is Catraz.
Just Catraz. All right. Well, brilliant. Best of luck with all the promotion work and let's hear Knock Knock by Catraz right now.
Feeling you getting hot while we rock, pop and drop. Somebody rocking hip hop. Open up the front door, and maybe later on we open up a little bit more. But let's save that to later when we start to taper. I feel like tonight's gonna be an earthquake. I came in through the
front door. The first room I came to was full of folk sitting on the floor, and I moved on down the corridor, cause that might work for them, but for me I really needed more. I needed to find a hip hop room, and I needed to find some alcohol that could be consumed. I drink red wine mainly, but really the only drinks that I don't drink are cider and Baileys. The next room that I came to was full of dark angels, half unhinged and unstable. One of them was trying to sell me a pill. I said I don't do pills because I like to stay, real. I finally found what I was looking for when I heard Biggie Smalls. I started dancing with some Jillian and Dominican women, the colour of cinnamon, and I was swimming with the venom and whatnot. My name is Alcatraz, I came to rub up to your derriere in the spot, feeling you getting hot while we rock, bop and drop to somebody rocking hip hop. Open up the front door, and maybe later on we open up a little bit more, but let's save that to later. When we start to taper, I feel like tonight's gonna be an earthquake. I stepped out with the two Latina women, they start singing, and I'm starting to tell them how I'm feeling. I tell them that I swallowed a ramen thesaurus, that I'm a Taurus, and I just say words of ramen through the chorus. They tell me I'm mad, crazy, crazy, complex, more size than a hexagon.
You're better than a Mexican.
I said, you reckon? Well, I used to live in Brecon, then I got tired of the beacons, and I moved back to Clifton. Yeah. Do you know what I'm missing? I said, parties were beating, and some fat speakers throbbing, like the chest of a robin, and then we arrived, there were lights in the sky, the DJs from the classics like, their ears start listening, their eyes start glistening, and I start pinching my skin, see if I'm dreaming, while I dance with the Chilean and Dominican women, the colour of cinnamon, again I'm swimming with the venom and whatnot. My name is Alcatraz, I came to rub up to your derriere in the spot, feeling you getting hot while we rock, bop and drop to somebody rocking hip hop. Open up the front door, and maybe later on we open up a little bit more, but let's save that till later. When we start to taper, I feel like tonight's gonna be an earthquake. S-N-O-O-P-D-O-G-G and beginning with N-W-A from D-R-E. Hey. The next party that we came to was for the glass tables and white lines, and horses in the stables, and OKRs saying OKR to the OKR friends, comparing our ends as well. My friends this ain't got no Benzes, most of them just try to make meet their ends. I head back home where I'm chilling with the Chilean and Dominican women, yeah, what feeling? Knock, knock. My name is Alcatraz, I came to rub up to your derriere in the spot, feeling you getting hot while we rock, bop and drop to somebody rocking hip hop. Open up the front door, then maybe later on we open up a little bit more, but let's save that till later. When we start to taper, I feel like tonight's gonna be an earthquake. Knock, knock. My name is Alcatraz, I came to rub up to your derriere in the spot, feeling you getting hot while we rock, bop and drop to somebody rocking hip hop. Open up the front door, then maybe later on we open up a little bit more, we can save that till later. When we start to taper, because I feel like tonight's gonna be an earthquake.
Now time for a little bit more of Anthony Page in Edinburgh, part two. The second feature is an interview with cast of Scene Productions Touring Theatre Company, in which they talk about the background to their play, The Other Side. This is based on stories of reconciliation between bereaved families in the Middle East, but first you'll hear an excerpt from the performance at the Gilded Balloon in Edinburgh.
Of the refugees. He treated all around him
makes our children do what they do. They do not understand the pain they are causing. Your son, by now, having to be in jail for many years. Mark, I would never be able to hold or see him married, or have a grandchild for me. I'm just glad to you the pain I have felt since his death. And that of all who knew him and loved him, when I found out your son had been captured and I spent many sleepless nights thinking about what to do. Should I ignore the whole thing? Or should I look for a way for closure and reconciliation? This isn't easy on anyone. And I am just an ordinary person and not a saint. I am now looking for a way to stop the cycle of violence.
My name's Catherine Hurst. I am the director of Scene Productions, a touring theatre company. And this is Kelly Taylor-Smith, my business partner, and Simon Nader, our third member of the cast. We're up in Edinburgh for the whole month with our newly devised production, The Other Side. It's based on true stories of reconciliation from the Middle East. We were very fortunate to interview people from Israel and Palestine and members of the Parent Circle, the Bereaved Families Forum in Tel Aviv. This is a group of people who have got together. They have all suffered a bereavement as a result of the conflict. And the main aim of the group is to talk to one another. And this was the subject of a Radio 4 documentary programme, Calls Across the Wall, whereby people were interviewed and they shared their stories. And we thought this was a very inspirational idea for a theatre piece. So Kelly and myself decided to interview members of the Parent Circle and decided to create a theatrical piece where we could share their stories and promote the idea of reconciliation through communication.
I'm Kelly, the other director of Scene. Yeah, basically we started off the research in wanting to create a devised piece from scratch, again using really simple props and scenery, so the emphasis was more on these characters and the actual message behind the story. We started doing a lot of research on how people don't really talk to each other anymore. When we heard the programme, Calls Across the Wall, we found that this had the underlying message that we were looking for, that we just need to start talking to one another and actually communicating. So we created Calls Across the Wall to get this message out there, and also we wanted a piece of theatre that wasn't just a piece of theatre. Yes, come along and be entertained, but at the same time we're hopeful that the message will then go on and it also spreads something a bit deeper than just entertainment.
My name's Simon Nader. It's a very, very visual show, which is something that's kind of maybe overdone here at the Fringe, but the good thing is that it also combines true life stories. It's not physical theatre per se.
We were three cast members. Yeah, there's two females, me and Catherine, and also Simon, who plays the guys. And obviously, we're trying to portray both sides, from the Palestinians and the Israelis. What we do is we play multiple role play, the interchanges and the changeovers from scenes. We use four simple metal frames, and these are almost used kind of looking into people's houses, looking through their doors, looking through their windows, and almost seeing things and putting the feeling across that you're listening to something that you maybe shouldn't. It's people talking to one another and having a conflict with each other, but these are the things that people don't normally hear.
We didn't want to talk about the political side, but the human side, and that's the emphasis of the Parent Circle. And when we were very fortunate to interview a woman called Robbie Damlin, who is a member of the Parent Circle, and the main thing she said is that the talk is not political. People share recipes, people talk about their children, where they grew up, where they went to school, and that's what we wanted to do in the production, just to share the stories without the the political background behind it, just to show that what people have a tendency to do is to stigmatise the image of the other. And we wanted to get rid of that by showing, well, we're all human, we all laugh, we all cry, we all feel the same pain. And we tried to create a scene whereby we show two women, a Palestinian woman and a woman from Israel, both cooking. And it's a really, really simple scene. It's all done in mime, but you see, they're human beings. They eat, they cook, they laugh. We're all human beings. And that was the main message we wanted to get across.
One part of the play, there's jokes about the other side. David, when the characters goes outside and he's killed.
What we wanted to come across there was jovial, light-hearted banter. I mean, we all have silly jokes about people we don't know. It was just idle banter, that was the aim, with this military truck and just seeing people going about their business. Yes, they're soldiers, but they're just having a chat and a laugh. So when he did get shot, the aim was to just shock the audience. They didn't expect it.
And again, it's people kind of making jokes up about the unknown. If you don't know something that's true, you hear a joke and you can make a joke about it. People have brought up with these images. There's Ali, who was one of the guys we interviewed in Mazan, the two Palestinian blokes. They showed us a documentary that they'd done in Palestine and Israel. Ali went into a room with lots of teenage boys. The youngest was about 7 years old and the oldest was about 18. And Ali was chatting with these youngsters, saying, look, we need to talk to the other side. You'll actually find that you might be good friends with them. And the seven-year-old jumped off the table and started making gun gestures and saying, bomb them, bomb them. The 18-year-olds got really kind of aggressive with Ali for actually saying, look, they're human beings. Actually, I've got a really, really good friend who I think of as my mother now, who is Robbie Damelin. And Ali actually said, have any of you in this room actually met somebody from the other side, actually sat down and had a conversation? And it was all kind of things they'd been heard or been brought up to believe. And by the end of it, he had these youngsters sitting down and you could have heard a pin drop. And they now are doing things where they bring children together through music or through dance, and they have physical theatre things. So again, this was kind of another way of saying, look, yeah, we crack jokes about things we don't know, or we crack jokes because we try and lighten the subject, till you actually get to meet the people. Who are you to judge?
The play is essentially about Gaza and Israel, but it could translate to many other anywhere. Situations.
The thing about children, you can even apply it into the UK. If you go to any playground, the fear of the other thing again, where somebody sees someone who's black, for instance, or Chinese, and makes a judgment there and then until they know better.
It's not about politics, it's about people communicating. And again, this message could be anywhere. It could be you might have a conflict with your neighbour opposite. But why is that conflict? Is it because something you've just assumed? Have you actually sat down and chatted to your neighbour? And let's just start getting to know each other again.
So any chance of you bringing the play to Bristol?
We would love to, yes.
We're looking to tour it after the Edinburgh Fringe. Our aim, we've been saving up as a company for 3 years to get us to Edinburgh. We wanted to do it right, and we've been very fortunate to get into a very good venue, the Gilded Balloon, so we're very happy with that.
Getting some good reviews, which
yes,
is great.
Good reviews hopefully equals people taking notice.
We've done a few schools in Bristol, the first piece we've actually created and devised from scratch for theatres. www.sceneproductions.co.uk. That's S-C-E-N-E productions.co.uk.
That was Anthony Page talking to the cast of The Other Side at the Gilded Balloon venue in Edinburgh. Oh, and I should mention, you can hear more from Edinburgh on BCFM 93.2 FM this Friday at 1:30 PM. Well, you may think the best internet connection is the cheapest one, but when it comes to customer service and jargon busting, paying a little more can make all the difference. GreenNet has been around since the early days of the internet.
My name's Anna Feldman and I work as the web project manager at GreenNet. GreenNet's a small internet service provider that provides communication services to NGOs and charities and campaigning organisations.
Now, when most people are thinking about setting up a website, they will just go for the cheapest option. Can you tell me just how it may be there's a different spread of different types of service providers? Because this is a world that very few people ever actually get a glimpse into.
Setting up a website has got various aspects to it. There's building the site and finding a space on a machine to host it, and then getting people to help you out. You've got problems or you need support with adding new content to your site. And in all those services, you're going to have different variations, different flavours from the different sorts of companies that you get them from. I know more about the company that obviously that I work for than the others, the competition out there. But I know that we get a lot of calls from people who feel upset and frustrated and sometimes exasperated with the patronising tone that they've had from other providers and the lack of thought and consideration about the work they do from other developers. And I think in a way that's what it comes down to. And people want a website for quite sophisticated reasons. You want it to tell your message, to communicate the things that you're doing. And that means that you need people that are helping you get it online, who are interested in what you're doing, that are almost more interested in what you're doing than in the technology. And that's kind of quite critical for GreenNet. We provide technology for making the most of what it is that you need to do. We don't try and peddle technology regardless. We're trying to find technology that will make the most of what it is that you're trying to do.
But you're only a tiny little service provider. How on earth can you compete with these gigantic guys in the big global scene?
Well, we can't really compete. you're right, we're a tiny service provider, and we've made a decision to be tiny as well. We've never tried to develop expertise in too broad a range of services, that we focus solely on technical development work and on providing, you know, the really sort of critical bottom line services like email hosting, web hosting. So we don't, for example, do graphic design work. We choose to work with other people who focus completely on that expertise. So we don't, and we, that's a kind of conscious decision to be small so that we can be quite intimate with our user base. And our users ring us up and we have conversations with them where we use each other's names, not membership numbers. We talk to them about the work they're doing. We think about what we know about technical tools and what will be able to bring the work that they do to life online and make more of what they're doing. I mean, in terms of your question about what's the difference then with what you'll get from cheaper providers, you won't get that kind of personal service. But I think more critically, you won't be talking to people that want to know what it is you're trying to do online. You're a generic user who has data. Finish. You know, data needs the space and it needs processing power to get it online. And that's a different, it's a different approach altogether, where everything is abstracted to its sort of barest common denominator, that it's just stuff online. And we're not taking that approach. That's one thing. And also, we're an organization that takes the ethics of how we work quite seriously. We use open source software on our computers.
What is open source software? For many people haven't heard of that term.
We choose to use software which is developed by people who share the code between them. We don't use software where the code is locked in and you need to pay a big corporation to use it. Not only because we don't want to pay for high software licenses, like you have to pay Microsoft when you want to use Microsoft Word. It's not only a question of expense, it's that we think the code should be open for us to adapt that software for our needs and share our adaptations with other people who'd find those adaptations useful. A nice example is perhaps the way that Microsoft software is often not available in languages which are not profitable for it to be translated into. It doesn't make any sense for Microsoft to translate Word into languages which are not widely spoken across the world. So people speaking those languages don't have localized versions of their software. Open source software, meanwhile, has its code open and developers are free to translate it and make it accessible to whoever it is who needs it. So that we use open source software in the office. We use open source software on our servers, and that helps us to have very responsive and secure systems, because we're part of a community of software developers that are constantly responding to needs as they arise. We have a flat management structure in terms of how we work in the office. Everybody is paid and treated equally. We don't have to charge salaries and have a salary structure which rewards fat cat management and pays high bonuses. We take seriously the power consumption of the machines that we use and the power consumption in the co-location centres where our servers are hosted. That's all of concern to us. And we use spare capacity that we have in the form of expertise and hosting space to support a broader, let's say, global network of civil society organisations when the need arises, and they need, you know, there's organisations that need rapid hosting of content which is under threat in their country.
That was Anna Feldman from the ethical internet service provider GreenNet, and you can visit www.gn.apc.org, which is an unusual address. The APC stands for the Association for Progressive Communications, which is a sort of international collective for ethical ISPs. Now it's time for this week's instalment of The Innkeeper's Diary, read by Malcolm Greaves. As ever, eagle-eared regular listeners will know all about this, but just if you're a newcomer, it's a story set in Oxfordshire in the 1920s. In 1922, out of the need to earn a living, Mr. John Fothergill moved with his family to Tame in Oxfordshire to run the Spread Eagle Inn. He was new to being a landlord, so there were lots of unexpected people and experiences.
An Innkeeper's Diary by John Fothergill. To a place like this, which no one passes but which is an end in itself, the RAC and AA signs are worse than useless because all we get through them is complaints. Five dreadful people whom I had charged 5 shillings and 6 pence for lunch one Sunday told me they would write to the AA about it. Saunders of the RAC, who happened to be lunching at the next table, told me I could tell the AA if they wrote that the lunch was worth 6 shillings. The AA did write, and I told them if complaints of their members embarrassed them, they would be wise to take me off their book. Today, the RAC man from the Oxford office came to complain that a gentleman had been here 5 days ago, had rung twice and waited 15 minutes and never got any tea, but went away. I told him to tell the man that he was evidently one of those people who preferred to shout a complaint to HQ to shouting to a kitchen. Kate, as a matter of fact, remembered seeing the man and wondered what he and his dog were doing, as both were apparently inarticulate. People give me things, their books or other creations. It's a peculiar kindness, making gifts to one who has been already paid sufficiently for his services. Professional men get the same jolly surprises. I asked Rook Lay why people did this, and he said it was to pay for that which you couldn't put down on the bill, which ought to disembarrass me. Since in trade giving is illogical, one has to make a virtue of taking, as next best. Kenneth Bell brought 7 hearties to dinner, himself in proctorial robes, just like him. The first batch of the 6 months Oxford course for West African administrators, these hearty beasts, as they style themselves, are to found the new tradition there, and will think well of Kenneth for not treating them as children at Oxford. During the soup, Kenneth Bell asked me if I could put up himself and his family here for a more or less indefinite period. As his family is immense, I was rather surprised. After dinner he asked if I had one of those big cheeses that you taste in shops. So I put before him a 62-pounder, 13 months old, and he talked again, now still more earnestly, about his family's coming. So I wrote next day to Mrs. Bell and asked what he really wanted, if anything. She quickly replied, saying that she knew these sudden outbursts of Kenneth's emotion, and was left to deal with the results herself. Once he walked here to dinner and back, 29 miles, leaving a running blue to be picked up by the roadside. Under his savage exterior, he's a tender sentimentalist. The philosophy of what we call lavatory work. It had rained all day, and the house had been unsuited with a soul, when 2 people, a man and a pretty woman, arrived at about tea time. "Will you show this lady the lady's room?" he demanded. She was shown. "And where is the gentleman's lavatory?" He too was shown. And 10 minutes afterwards they brushed past Kate and the maid without a word, got into their car and drove off. Kate told me just in time to look out of the window and take their number, for I thought it rather cool. I've written to X to know his name and address. X has sent me the particulars wanted, e.g. a Brigadier General B. To him I wrote, apologising in case I was writing to the wrong man, recounting what he had done and adding, "You were guilty of bad manners. You know it, but can't help it." The Colonel replied, asserting that his action was allowable in an A hotel, even without taking a meal. Damn the fellow for suggesting that I wanted anything but common thanks, and that I arrogated to myself the right to lecture AA members on manners, and that he would report me to that body. I answered that my short note had elicited just what I really wanted from him. I explained his position legally, socially, and as to the AA, and told him that unless he sent me the AA's reply to his complaint, I would assume that they had put him wise. I added that I hoped he had no unfriendly feelings towards me, and offered my kind regards. He never replied. I also wrote to the AA telling them that if my connection with them meant an open lavatory without thanks to some hundreds of thousands of their members, I must cancel it. I heard no more. I started this fight for personal reasons. I continued it pro bono, public house. And this fellow gives me to reason about the practice of using an inn for some purpose for which the landlord is not directly out of pocket, or of thinking that they are making good by graciously ordering a drink. The drink has to pay for itself, of course, and not for other amenities. If a stranger uses the telephone and WC and then looks round the garden and asks to be shown the dining room because he's heard that it's seaworthy, and then, out of kindness or patronisingly, orders a drink at the market price and sits with it before your fire for 1.5 hours until his bus comes, his sole purpose in coming at all, and has said neither please nor thank you, he has paid nothing for those other things and amenities which cost the owner money and labour. They can be paid for only by charm of manner, just as they would be at a private house, and it is irritating to have people thinking that they can avoid the effort of behaving decently by this inexpensive little trick of buying a packet of cigarettes. Probably the customer rose in the avaricious publican himself, who, valuing trade at any cost, preferred fourpence to a guinea's worth of grace. The practice is especially vicious because delightful people also, having by their generous manner put the innkeeper under an obligation to them, still think it necessary to ask for the habitual complimentary drink, which I try to dissuade them from persisting in. Today's examples are of either sort. The latter, Jack Haldane, brother of Naomi Mitchison, and Mrs. Charlotte Haldane, a brother to Bert, etc., came to see me in the place for the first time and began by apologising unnecessarily for coming too late to have lunch. Then, after a delightful half hour in the garden, most of which I spent in quarrelling with handsome Mrs. Haldane's factitious prejudices, Haldane, the huge and virile, insisted upon buying a 1 shilling and 2 pence box of Turkish Delight, presumably for the good of the house, and left with it under his kind arm. The former sort. A car drives up with 2 ladies. One of them gets out, and I catch her running upstairs, and she turns round. "Oh, tell me, isn't there a beautiful garden here?" The wording of the question would imply that it grows there either of itself or out of public funds. "Well, I have rather an interesting garden, but it isn't upstairs." "Oh, no, but I had heard that there was a beautiful garden here." "If you would like to see my garden, I'd be glad to show it to you." "Oh, would you? And perhaps we might be able to get back for lunch." And so far, the difficult please and thank you has been vigorously withheld. She collected her friend, and we proceeded, and she repeated her luncheon threat, to which, knowing that it was all rot, I now replied, "You don't pay for seeing the garden by having luncheon. That pays only for itself." In the yard, she asked, "Is this a very old house?" "Well, it's not Roman. Indeed, judged by some inns, it might be considered modern." So I showed them politely into the garden and left them. They returned almost immediately and drove off, their visits upstairs frustrated, and didn't return. It may seem petty to bother about this sort of thing, but we innkeepers pay for our gardens and UDC lavatories, and should not tolerate these sneaking attempts to get privilege and shy refinement for nothing.
Thank you very much to Malcolm Grieve for reading that. He's an excellent reader, and if you're interested, the introductory music is a tune called Old Molly Oxford and was performed by musicians in the Royal Naval Volunteer Pub, the famous Royal Naval Volunteer Pub, which is in King Street. It's now a pleasure, as always, to introduce the black leather clad Jeff to tell us what's going on in Bristol this week. Hello.
Hello. Good evening. This is your What's On Guide from Dialect Radio. Starting with Friday, 21st of August, RSVP, Emily Breeze, Trans World Jazz and Moscow Drug Club will all be performing at the Queen Square Session in Queen Square, Bristol. The event starts at 5 p.m. and entry is free. Moving on to Saturday, 22nd of August, and James Morton's Pork Chop will be performing at the Golden Lion in Gloucester Road, Bristol. The gig starts at 9 p.m. and entry is free. On to Song of the Week and a feature of the Sex Pistols. Back in 1978, when the group split up, the remaining members, namely Paul Cook and Steve Jones, travelled to South America and recorded a song with Ronnie Biggs. The song is titled No One Is Innocent and can be found on the soundtrack album The Great Rock and Roll Swindle. That was the Sex Pistols with No One Is Innocent from the soundtrack album The Great Rock and Roll Swindle. For more information on them, you can check out www.sexpistolsofficial.com and also www.myspace.com/sexpistolsofficial. Keeping with Saturday, 22nd of August, and there'll be 16 bands all performing at the Surface Unsigned Regional Final, which will be held at the O2 Academy in Frogmore Street, Bristol. Some of the bands performing will be Morta de la Mer, Leave Before Dawn, First Degree Burns, Morton View and Crimson Sky. Doors open at 11:30 a.m. and tickets are £9 in advance and £10 on the door. On to Sunday, 23rd of August, and Powder Monkey will be performing at the Farrier's Arms in Fishponds Road, Bristol. The gig starts at 3 p.m. and entry is free. Finally, on the 23rd of August, Steve Payne and Lee McCrory will be performing at the Carnation Tap in Bristol. The gig starts at 8:30 p.m. and entry is free. That is all from me. Thanks for listening. Have a great week. Take care and goodbye.
Well, that's all for this week, but we'll be back next week for more about Bristol. Thank you very much to Satiana for coming in to be interviewed about the free shop, which is in Stokescroft, and to Katraz for sparing a bit of time to come along and promote his new single. You can check him out on YouTube. The single is called Knock Knock. Thank you to Malcolm Gree for all his efforts in reading The Innkeeper's Diary, and the features were by Anthony Page and Tony Gosling. The What's On Guide was compiled and read by Jeff Sparks. The engineer was Mark Condon, and the producer presenter was John Peters Coleman. The show is downloadable from our website, dialectradio.co.uk. In fact, if you just Google Dialect Radio, all sorts of stuff comes up, including all of our previous shows, which are all on there for posterity. Thank you to all at BCFM, 93.2 FM, and drop by their website, bcfm.org.uk. If you're interested in sort of joining in, and you want to come along and sort of have a look at what we do, and you kind of think, oh, well, I kind of like to be interested in radio, don't feel afraid. We're all kind of friendly. We don't bite, and you can have a free cup of tea on the house. What a draw. Email bristolradiocoop@hotmail.co.uk. That's all one word. So it's goodbye from all of us in Queen Square. I'm John Peters Cohen, wishing you a very good week. Goodbye.